Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
Right, my family, 38 minutes after one. Zoe, this afternoon, great sounds of music with the Mountains of Life. It's all about love, taken from the book of Song of Solomon this afternoon. That is where we are parked at, literally. We're parking there because we want to come back, or rather, I want to come back, and I want to share this with you, just spreading the good news of the love of God this afternoon. Verse 10, Song of Solomon, chapter 2, my family. My beloved speaks to me and says, "Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. For behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth once again. The time for singing has come. And the song of the turtle dove is heard in our land. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away." That is the call this afternoon, my family, from my heart to yours, or rather from the word of God to my heart and from my heart to yours, the call to God's love, the call to a restoring love, a redeeming love. By the way, you know, we had a Francina Rivers, yeah, that was years ago. I think almost, what, over 10 years ago now. Redeeming Love. Oh, man, what a novel. It's probably one of the best fiction novels, Christian fiction novels that I've ever read. No. It's probably second best because it has to come after Hannah Hancock. Yeah, interesting, actually. You see, now I'm sharing my thoughts, right? I'm thinking out loud because I'm realizing Redeeming Love was good. But not before Hannah Hancock, and certainly not before Catherine. I need to remember now a man called Peter. Oh, I need to remember. Anyway, so the author there of that one was Senate Peter's wife. Yeah, I need to remember the surname. Anyway, so great, great, great reads, my family. But Redeeming Love, certainly a beautiful story of love based on the book of Hosea. And today's scripture just reminds me of that. We are on a constant every single day. We're being called up to the place of love. And right now, we're turning the page back to conversation with Dr. Mvuyisi Mzukwa, who joins us this afternoon, my family, to help us understand, you know, all about the National Health Insurance. What is it? What does it mean for you and I? How does it apply? When does it kick in? All of those questions being answered in the next 20 minutes after this quick break.
Pila impilo yakho nathi. Ngena ku radiopulpit.co.za. Umngani wakho imihla ngemihla.
Come and ask your questions, share your concerns, experiencing life on 657 AM.
Dr. Mzukwa, the chairperson of the South African Medical Association, my family, sir, good afternoon, and thank you so much for giving us your time here at Radio Pulpit.
Good afternoon to you and to your listeners, and thanks for inviting me.
No, thank you for having made the time. Let's get straight to it, Dr. Mzukwa, this afternoon. The National Health Insurance, I mean, the month of May, end of April, beginning of May, was made a little bit short, you know, because of this National Health Insurance story. When news came out that Parliament has signed the bill. And so many questions. It's kind of died down, but we know that it hasn't really in reality. So what exactly is this National Health Insurance?
Well, NHI is just a financing system, you know. Or should I say, health financing system?
Sure.
That is really designed to provide universal health coverage for all South Africans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is not universal health coverage, but it's a vehicle that takes us there. Now, the objective of the NHI is to ensure that, you know, all of us as citizens and legal residents and can have access to quality health services, regardless of our socioeconomic status. It's like a big medical aid that we are all beneficiaries of. All government to do is to buy services for all of us.
sure.
You know, closer to where we live, when we need it. And obviously, we follow the referral pattern. Say, for example, you need tertiary services or you need to be referred to a hospital, all those things. It is a system that will be managed, you know, from the primary healthcare services. So it is intended to address disparities in healthcare access and quality.
Mm-hmm.
And it aims to improve overall health outcomes and create sort of a more efficient and equitable healthcare system in our country.
Doc, who pays for the NHI?
Well, from what we've heard from government is that government is going to tax, citizens, because the aim is that if you are using a medical aid, you should stop the medical aid and depend on the NHI. We would know that as the South African Medical Association, we have our own reservation when it comes to the NHI.
Mm.
But, you know, it was, you know, to come, you know, there's a possibility that they are going to shift funds from the provinces and also those tax credits that we get from our medical aid and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And including road accident funds and all this clump together. That you know, it's really not clear where this is going to come from, but there have been indications of how they want to fund the NHI. But at the moment, they even told us that for the next 3 years or so,
mm-hmm.
2 or 3 years, they don't anticipate any implementation of a new tax. So we really don't know where that is coming from. But what we do know is that they told us that, you know, the equitable share that goes to provinces will be shifted to the NHI. But as you can imagine, that is not enough. It will need additional tax,
sure.
You know, from taxpayers, yeah.
Doc, you know, when news broke out mid-May around this matter, I, from just an observer point of view, really felt like the country was a little bit divided, you know, a straight line divide between taxpayers and healthcare providers. In your assessment as the Medical Association, what was that response? How was this NHI received and why?
Maybe let me talk from the provider side, or what should I say, the professional
side. Healthcare providers, yes, sir.
Exactly. Now, what did happen is that we felt that, you know, the government wasn't really listening to us as professionals.
Okay.
In terms of, you know, we thought the system was not ready for the NHI. For example, if you go to the rural areas, there are no clinics there. There are no access, like there are no roads for ambulances and stuff like that.
Mm.
So even ambulances themselves, they're very few. So if you are going to be implementing NHI, you've got to have infrastructure in place. You know, it's not good to just have it on paper when actually on the ground it doesn't exist. I think we've lived in South Africa for a very long time where things exist on paper, but in reality, they are not there.
Right. No, absolutely. Let me just test that, Dr. Mzuga, for a while. Let me just test that. So let's use the example of the rural areas, for example. And so the health healthcare provider's concern is that where there's no infrastructure, then there will be an influx. I'm trying to understand the linkages in the sense that, in fact, from where I'm standing, you know, as a consumer, you know, of medical services, it almost feels as if what the health, National Health Insurance does, it provides access, you know, to more people than is the case currently. How do we connect the issue of infrastructure to NHI?
Yes. Remember, ma'am, a point we're trying to drive home here is that NHI is not going to be building hospitals. It's not going to be building clinics. It's not going to employ healthcare workers that are in dire shortage as we speak. It's not going to solve the issue of ethical leadership and governance. So what it does, you know, that there are about six pillars of a healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
Health financing, there's infrastructure, human resources for health, medicines and technology, leadership and governance, service delivery, all of these things. So you just, when you are saying you are reforming, you can't be focusing just on one pillar.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be holistic, approach all the pillars and make sure that when you deliver, you speak to all the pillars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're talking about access, how are the people in the rural areas going to access healthcare when there are no clinics? When there's an introduction of NHI, but there are no clinics, how are they going to benefit from that NHI? Secondly,
right. Mm-hmm.
Because there's a dire shortage of healthcare workers, how are we going to resolve the issue of access again? Because, you know, you've got to meet the people and be serviced by, you know, the people. Because healthcare workers are the backbone of a healthcare system. They are like the face of the system. So if there's a shortage of those, how are you going to be providing universal healthcare,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also the other complication is the issue of leadership, ethical leadership and governance. You may have heard that recently there was a report by the association.
Mm-hmm.
It's ASAP. I forgot the full name.
No problem, sir. Yeah. We'll look it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's Academy of Science of South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They have released a report, you know, a scathing report, talking about the challenge of ethical leadership in South Africa, in the healthcare sector. And they say in their conclusion that there's no NHI unless you attend to the issue of ethical leadership and governance. You will have noted what is happening now. People buying skinny jeans, for example, what is that? The issue of corruption, the issue of tenders and corruption in the business. You know, what happened to the PPE, you know, during the time of COVID, you know, all these things are being mentioned, you know. This, by the way, is an advisor to government. It's not healthcare professional. It's an independent body, objective, trying to advise government. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So they are pointing issues that you've been pointing out to say, if you want to have access, people have to have access to equitable access to quality healthcare. These are the issues that you need to address.
Mm.
So you go to most provinces, people are on acting positions there. If they're on acting positions, it means they're not trained for that. So they can't deliver. So there'll be issues of finances, there'll be issues of service delivery. So all these things we put before the government and say, when you implement, you must also take care of these issues we're talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so if I'm hearing you correctly, Dr. Mzuga, the issue here is not necessarily a direct opposition more than it is a caution on priority, right? I'm trying to capture what I'm hearing. And it's really that if we prioritize financing access to healthcare without having first built, you know, and sorted out the infrastructure and sorted out everything else that goes, you know, with having to access healthcare, then we are creating a disaster. And secondly, on the issue of governance, of course, what I'm hearing the South African Medical Association say is that with regards to governance, we've still not seen, you know, a proper audit around the issue of PPE, what makes us think that we will be able to handle NHI well? Am I correct, sir?
Yes, we are correct, ma'am. These are the issues. In our opening statement, we've been making presentations since the times of the green paper, the white paper, the bill. Even we made oral presentations in Parliament.
Sure.
We've been pointing issues out. We are saying we support the objectives of the NHI, But in its current form, it does not address the challenges that we have in our system. You will just simply have NHI on paper, but the problems are still there.
Sure.
For example, if we look at the issue of leadership, we need a visionary leader who is going to share the vision. It must filter through, all the managers up until the cleaner in the hospital. You know, they must know what healthcare means. You know, there is no such a vision at this point in time. I mean, the president already has had two presidential summits. They yielded nothing. Instead, we're seeing a deterioration of services in the hospitals, in the Eastern Cape as we speak. There are no needles, basic things, no gel codes. Nothing. There is a further challenge of a security, where doctors are being robbed in hospitals. You know, nurses are being robbed in the clinics. And then you come up with this pie in the sky called NHI that you think is going to solve this. It's not going to solve because, the other pillars have not been touched. That's all we're saying.
And of course, I think, just in hearing your point, Dr. Mzuga, what it also does, I mean, when you trigger demand without having prepared for supply, you are curating disaster. You know what I mean? I mean, if I, for example, qualify for NHI, I am going to want to go and address my outstanding health issues. You know, that I couldn't have done, without...
Look at the UK.
Yeah.
The UK is crumbling as we speak. The healthcare system in the UK is crumbling. Mm. Why is it crumbling? There's a dire shortage of doctors. There's a huge backlog. I mean, some of those patients are coming to South Africa to the private sector to be treated here in South Africa from the UK. Their doctors are going to New Zealand. They are going to all these other places because they cannot afford in terms of remunerating healthcare workers correctly, and all shortages of medicine. There's all these things. So if it is happening in the best world country, how much more with us with a very small tax base?
Dr. Mzuga, talking about those numbers, let's maybe just take a step back and look at the application. What would this look like, in practice? Let's just say we've now covered, maybe in the current state, what would that look like in practice, NHI? Who would it affect the most, and how does it apply to me as an individual?
Well, what is going to happen is that if we were to start now, most people, if we were to start now, because most of the public hospitals are dilapidating.
Yes.
Most people would rush to the nearest private hospital.
Is that
if
where...
people were to say, yes, that's what is going to happen.
Yeah.
People are just going to rush to that if it's not well managed. And state hospitals are not improved in terms of the infrastructure and all these things. So it is important, to manage those dynamics, because if, for example, I live here in Durban, if my nearest hospital would be Prince Mthiyeni, knowing the condition of Prince Mthiyeni, I can't go there, because there's shortages of healthcare workers, there's shortages of broken equipment, the issues of hygiene and all these things. I would go to the nearest Kingsway Hospital.
Of course. And of course, what that means then for private healthcare is that, as you were saying, that for private healthcare, then that becomes a headache. It becomes a balance sheet headache, right?
Yes.
Okay.
No, that's correct. There's no two ways about it. The private sector is expensive, and that needs to be regulated. But you remember there was a health market inquiry report by the Competition Commission with a recommendation. Those recommendations have never been implemented by the same government. So how do you expect the private sector to self-regulate?
No, they can't. Absolutely not. I mean, if the Competition Commission has done its work and there's no implementation of its... I get that. And in fact, thank you for bringing that up, because I do think that there's a lot of redundancy in that space, you know, about reports coming out, commissions doing work, you know, and absolutely no follow through after that. So basically, Dr. Mzuka, if I'm... Yeah. So right now, the biggest threat of this NHI is private healthcare.
Yes, I would say there needs to be partnership. The private healthcare has to be regulated. You know, those expensive procedures and stuff like they need to be regulated. The hospitals, you know, everybody in that space, they need to be regulated. And but it has to be a fair process. You can't just regulate it and starve them. It has to be healthy. Yes. So those are the things, and you know, we've seen during the COVID that we can have a partnership with the private sector.
Yes,
you know, and it's well regulated; it can work. But there's not been any appetite from government on implementation of the recommendation. So you will always have all this. I mean, there was a report that was compiled in 2022, 2020. It is a human resource for health 2030 strategy. It has never been implemented. The government says they don't have money.
Sure.
They don't have, you've got unemployed doctors, you've got unemployed nurses, health, social workers, all these cadres in the healthcare system.
Sure.
So you give a healthcare system, a quality good healthcare system, where actually you do not have enough of whatever is needed in the system.
So tell me, Doc, what are some of the limitations of the private healthcare sector in, you know, making strides to put in place, just from a social philanthropy point of view, putting in place some of the biggest threats to the health of the private healthcare sector? What are some of your limitations? Is it red tape? Are they legislative limitations? And I'm asking this because you mentioned something really powerful that I think we always need to revert back to. It is how private sector and government worked so well together during COVID. Surely it can't take disaster for us to get to that point where we take hands and do what needs to be done. What are some of your, of the private sector rather, limitations right now?
Well, the challenge is that there's been the issue of the low cost benefit option.
Sure.
You know, that is sitting with the CMS, the Council for Medical Scheme. You know, it has been an issue trying to, the funding industry trying to reach out to those that can, you know, cannot afford the normal medical
aid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it would have taken quite a chunk of population from that state, you know, and they would benefit in the private sector. But also when it comes to issues of licensing, you know, politicians have been, you know, wanting to use bribes and all these things, you know, to license. You know, they people have been interested in putting a private hospital in, you know, semi-rural areas and stuff like that. But the issue of licensing becomes an issue. You know, unless you give something to, you know, you come up with a...
oiling of hands.
Brown envelope. You get that license.
And
so it's a huge challenge that we're facing.
So the picture that I am seeing painted, Doc, is one of... hostility is probably a strong word, you know, but resistance, you know, from government, resistance in terms of listening to stakeholders. I mean, private health, the healthcare is a major stakeholder in the health space. So there's resistance where government is not listening. And when, you know, the healthcare sector says, okay, fine, you know, we'll put up clinics, we'll have supplementary facilities, et cetera, et cetera. There's still a problem with regards to legislation in that space. Where to from here, Doc?
The problem is that our government is not really innovative in their approach.
Right.
And And even if they get the private sector, that seems, innovative. They've got that pride of not wanting to accept. You know, whenever you suggest something to government, it's taken as if you want to co-govern. You know, that's what they confuse it with. I mean, in all these countries with National Medical Association, they always partner with those because they know that their young minds, they're, you know, very innovative. I mean, if you have, in our case, we always have these aging ministers, that are being recycled by government. And I'm telling you, you can't have any progress when you're talking about 20, you're talking about the future with somebody who's waiting for 10, 15 years to die. You know, that person cannot be planning for the future. It's a reality that it must be told. You can't be heading a country, a complex system like the healthcare system, when you are aging. It does not only apply to healthcare. It applies to all other sectors in society. Mm. So they need to make sure that, young people are given a chance. It's time that the elderly now give a chance to the young ones. I was not saying they must get out, but they must be that period where they say we're stopping there and allowing the next generation to take over.
Sure. No, Dr. Mzugwa Siakuva, and thank you so much for your insights shared with us this afternoon. We certainly will be, looking and watching over some of the updates in that space. But in the meantime, where can I go to find out, more information and how NHI affects me as an individual?
Well, the Department of Health has got its own website, where you can get this information. Whether it's, having frequently answered questions that you can, they answer there and give you all the, the detail. But obviously, they will give you a government perspective and they will not give you a balanced view.
Yeah. Dr. Mzugwa, thank you so much for all the work that I think also the South African Medical Association has done, all the efforts that you continue to do in advocating for a certain standard, an acceptable standard of healthcare in our country, as well as your continuous engagement with government. We appreciate it, Ningadinwa, and we certainly will be staying in touch just to get some updates from some of the reports and the work that you're doing on the ground.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I appreciate the time.
Fantastic. Dr. Mvuyisi Mzugwa, my family, who is the chairperson of the South African Medical Association, joining us here on the program. 2:06, your good news already for our consumption at this hour. And of course, we're going to be crossing straight to that. But this conversation will certainly be podcast. Please do stay tuned here on Heart to Heart all the way to 3:00 this afternoon. Any other questions on the matter of the NHI, my family, government website, Department of Health, please do check it out. And let's ask those questions so that when we do have these conversations, we can target our questioning, especially with our experts. 2:06 is your time. Your news is up next.
You're at 657 AM, radio caring, 24 hours a day.
Do you need prayer? WhatsApp your name and your prayer request to 082-657-2729. And our care center will gladly contact you to pray for you.
It's good for you as our listener to know about Radio Pulpit's activities. Or do you need advice in an area of your life? Then why don't you log on to www.radiopulpit.co.za. Here you can talk to us, listen to us via live audio streaming, and there is also other reading material for the soul. What are you waiting for? Visit the Radio Pulpit website right now. www.radiopulpit.co.za. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion.
You and 657 AM and life, a winning team on the road to eternity.